Welcome back, everybody, to the Trade Raiders Podcast, the comic book club where we read a different trade paperback every week.
Every single goddamn week.
And us. It's fun for us, too.
I guess.
I'm Daniel. My co-host, Nathan, is sitting across from me. He's also my brother. We read comics.
We sure do.
Did I miss anything?
No, I think that's everything. We nail it every single time. It's always the exact same every single time.
It's always flawless. That intro.
Yeah. It's been a long week, it feels like.
Oh, yeah, I feel like we haven't potted in a while.
I know. I was starting to have withdrawals. Potted, yeah. I haven't potted at all in the last week. It's been ridiculous.
Definitely need to pod really soon.
But welcome back, everybody. Honestly, hope you've had a great, good old week. A couple updates. Last week I did sign us up for the Eisners, and I've been monitoring my email.
Oh.
And nothing has come through yet. Ah, so so I've been monitoring, but for some reason
today, and I was like, and then you brought it up. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah, for some reason they haven't gotten back to me. I don't know why.
I would brag about that to people who don't even know what I'm talking about.
I don't even, yeah. Yeah, if I got on just thinking about it is so just like simple, just like people that vote on what comics are good or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Know? I would be super stoked on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, nothing yet. I'll send them an email. I'm sure they just haven't gotten it. You know, I'm sure that if they saw it, they'd be like, these guys need to vote on what comics are important right away.
So they're probably, you know, get a lot of requests and they have to like filter out all the shitty podcasts.
Yeah. But then,
and then find the good ones like ours.
I'm sure all the
grant us access.
I'm sure all of the Academy are big fans of Trade Waiters.
Of course.
So they'd be happy to have us on.
Right, right.
I'm surprised they haven't reached out to us already.
Yeah, like
before we even signed up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. But anyway, if there's any new listeners, there's time codes for the news or for the book or for the back matter and the pull list where we just talk about things that we've been consuming. So feel free to jump around if you'd like. But the first
personally,
one,
I just had a salad. I consumed that.
Yep. Daniel consumed that. I consumed some McDonald's on the way here.
Oh man. Normally, broke the salad and go.
Yeah. Normally I do salad tradition. And go, but I was just like, man, I could really use some fries right now.
Hard left turn on,
yeah.
On your habits.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we'll start off with the news. Daniel, it's official.
Is it?
Stan Lee gets a street named after him in New York City.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah. So it's going to be called Stan Lee Way. Stan Lee Way.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool.
That's nice.
He's forever cemented in the history of New York City, which I think is pretty dope. So good stuff there.
Nathan.
Daniel.
The team behind the Harley Quinn animated series was asked by DC to remove a scene from an upcoming third season episode depicting Batman giving Catwoman oral sex.
This is the big news of the week. Yes.
Definitely. It blew up on Twitter. It was really fucking funny.
Yeah, a lot of people were making fun like of
hashtag
the whole thing.
Let Batman eat pussy.
Yes. How am I supposed to believe that Catwoman is dating a man that doesn't eat pussy?
Like, Batman is what, you know, I reflect my entire life on, you know, I'm like, would Batman do this?
Yeah.
Am I as good as Batman? You know, never. But I'm like, this is maybe the right direction.
Uh-huh.
You know, who doesn't want to like lift and just be as big as Batman?
Yeah. So everybody does.
Yeah. And if Batman doesn't eat pussy, why would he be an idol of mine?
Why would the only part of skin that you see of his be his mouth?
Right.
If he's not even going to use it.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
Yeah, dude, he can.
That's like the only. That's,
he can go down a Catwoman in full uniform.
That's the only sexual thing he can do in full uniform.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
I can't imagine how hard it is to actually get all that shit off. Like,
yeah.
For sex.
So, yeah.
Just real quick.
It's crazy. But, I mean, to be fair, people kind of blew it a little bit out of proportion because the people on the Harley Quinn show were like, they've let us get away with a lot up to this point and we're really appreciative. But people were like, what? No oral sex? So it's not like an actual big controversial thing. I think it's just a big joke that everybody likes to play along. Because the show,
yeah,
the Harley Quinn show is really good.
Yeah, I imagine with it being like animated and it's somewhat for children.
Yeah.
But there's like tons of like adult shit snuck into like kids shows.
I don't really think it's for children either necessarily. Because people are like cursing and stuff. Like I think it's like a... I mean, I feel like if you're a fan of Harley Quinn, you're probably like 45 years old and an old white dude, you know?
Nah,
there's like balding.
No, when the Suicide Squad came out, like every girl was like Harley Quinn.
Yeah, I guess that's true. There's probably a bigger fan base now. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not like a kid's show, though. It's like and I definitely enjoyed a lot. So season two, I think, was even better than season one. Wow. I haven't watched all the way through it. I'm mm-hmm. just like a couple episodes to the finish, but I think they've done really well.
You know, I'll watch it because of this. I knew it was good.
Yeah.
And I just never like kind of got around to it.
Can you put your microphone back a smidge?
Apparently there's a new Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino book.
I saw that.
From Image in September.
Yeah.
It might be called Classified. I don't know. Because I keep seeing this fucking picture of like this file. And it's like, obviously they're hiding, you know, what it is.
I think the project is Classified. I don't think the book is called that. But yeah. If it was called Classified, that's really funny because no one knows.
Yeah,
because
you think it's secret.
Yeah.
And be like, there, wait, what's this book called? Like, we've been telling you for like three months.
We announced it like a month ago. Like,
yeah.
No, it's pretty funny. Like, because they're doing the silver coin thing where it's like, oh, these two creators, Image, what is this book? Oh. So they're kind of like hyping it up. But based off what I've seen, because I don't know, they've posted like multiple pictures like that. And I don't know if you've seen them, but they look like case files. And there's a picture of a monkey paper clips to it. And so there's two
Detective
of those.
Chimp.
There's two of those image like pictures, and then there's a picture of the moon in one of them. So I think it's some sort of story about monkeys, like as astronauts going to the moon and discovering something there.
You know, I saw like a little NASA like clip, like that was like on the corner of one.
Yeah.
So space involved.
Space monkeys.
Space monkeys. Oh yeah, I see the monkey one now. Okay.
Yeah. So I assume it's something like that. But I'm glad that the two are working together.
Has anything happened in 1959 that's significant?
Probably when
did we go to the moon?
I don't know. I'm not that much of an American to know when we landed on the moon first, because we definitely did
it
first.
I thought it was like the 60s, but I guess that's around there.
Well, I guess we would have had to explore getting something into space and bringing it back, which is what I assume they used monkeys for. So maybe it's just that story, but personifying
September 20th, 1951
was what?
So that was like 8 years before this date.
Interesting.
So it's somewhere in the middle there.
Well, I guess we'll see. I can't imagine it'll be too much longer before they announce it.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll know by like the end of the month.
Yeah. Daniel, E3 has been happening this last week, and there's been lots of new games and stuff, but we're not a gaming podcast, are we?
No, we talk about them.
Yeah, we talk about it every once in a while when we play them, but
if they're in accordance to comic books.
Yeah, which know. In this case there are, because there was a first look at Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy video game coming out from Square Enix, who's the production company behind the Avengers game, which was not very good. I think the idea was there, they just didn't do it well. And so, but this is going to be a single player game, whereas Avengers was multiplayer and weird.
Okay.
This is just like a single player story game where you play as Star-Lord, and the whole Guardians crew is there.
But you can't like switch over to Groot or anything like that?
No, it's just Star-Lord. I think you can control the rest of like, you could like tell like Rocket and Groot what to do based off of what I saw in like the UI. Okay. Because there's buttons to like interact with them in a certain way in action from what I saw.
Okay.
But looks pretty solid, honestly. I'm excited for it. I like the designs. Specifically, I think Drax looks really cool.
Yeah, everyone looks like a little different from like, you know, what we know in the movies and what we know in like comic books.
Yeah.
Like his like, you know, scars or whatever are like super different.
Yeah.
And then like
Rocket's got a weird like beard thing, braided goatee beard thing.
Groot's like a little bit bigger and branchier.
Yeah. more branch.
And then Gamora just looks like
she's got more mascara on.
Yeah, shit like that.
Yeah, so it looks pretty good. So I told you like I'm excited, but I'm a little bit cautious because the studio messed up the Avengers game. Which, how do you mess that up?
What they got right was Cosmo the Space Dog.
Yes, there was Cosmo the Space Dog.
So that'd be trailer. Dope. I hope he's like as important as he is in the game, you know, but we don't know.
I don't think he'll play much of a role. I think he was kind of fan servicey, to be honest, in the trailer, but we will find out on October 26th, 2021. Cause that's when the game comes out.
That's cool. I like how it's like kind of around the corner.
Yeah, it's like 4 months away.
I feel like they announced it and it's like, oh, 2 years from now.
That's what like half of E3 is.
It's bullshit.
Like, there's like a big Bethesda title, which are the people that make like Fallout and like just a bunch of really big games. And mm-hmm. it's called like Starfield or something. And it comes out November of 2022. So yeah. I'm like, why even do this now?
So yeah, just announce it next year.
Yeah, which would have been perfect, but...
Isn't there Black Panther DLC coming out for the Avengers game, I think?
Yeah, there is. There's like a Wakanda DLC coming out that's going to be for free. Hmm. So I think that that's kind of a course correction for that game. Like, they made it for free so that people would, like, hop back on the game and try it again. That's what it seems like to me, though.
Yeah, for sure. That's so cool, though.
Hopefully it's good, but I don't have it anymore, so... Oh, well.
We got a first look at the Green Lantern Jade in this in Stargirl Season 2.
Oh, I didn't see that. Do you have a picture?
I can find it. But, yeah, that's the daughter of Alan Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty smart, huh, Nathan? You think I'm pretty smart?
I do think you're pretty smart. That's quite a deep cut. Let's see this.
You get to see Green Lantern back in action again, Nathan.
Wow, look at that lantern. Looks pretty good.
Yeah.
We'll see how that ends up working out. I'm surprised that got a season two.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I heard anything bad about it.
I don't think I did either, but wasn't it like a DC Universe TV show? Or was it released on CW?
I think it was DC Universe, but was like...
moved to CW maybe after they...
No, it was like... it was on the DC Universe or HBO Max or whatever. But I think it was in that same universe, though, as the CW.
Okay.
So it like could cross over, but it's like different.
Well, I will look at just season two.
It says CW right here, so I guess not.
Oh, okay. Well, then I guess I'll watch the episodes with just Jade in it, because I don't really care for the other show that much, or the rest of the show.
Surprise, she's in all the episodes.
Well, then I guess I'm watching the whole season.
Nathan, did you see the season 3 trailer for Titans?
I haven't, no. I saw that they released like a... they were teasing a teaser yesterday, but I haven't seen the trailer today.
Yeah, it's Jason Todd going into a warehouse, and yeah. You know, and then you see a Red Hood helmet.
Yeah,
which pretty... it looks really fucking cool.
Yeah, the show's pretty solid, honestly. It like... I couldn't tell someone to watch it and be like, this is like such a great show, because it's like not.
Yeah,
but what's interesting about the show is that like it's cheesy, but I'm interested in the creative choices that they do with it. If okay. that makes sense. So yeah, like, yeah. It's not like I'm watching the comics, but just done in like with cheesy dialogue. There's like interesting changes to the characters that I kind of fuck with.
Okay.
So that's kind of what's kept me going.
Sure.
I think that the season two finale, there's like, it's basically Superboy and he's gone mad, and then like the Titans have to like stop Superboy. Right. And they successfully do that and it's all good. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then literally in like the last 3 minutes, a random like lightning bolt hits like a light pole, and then it falls down on, I think it was like Donna Troy, mm-hmm. and it like kills her.
Oh.
So it's not even like Superboy kills Donna Troy, which I think would be interesting because he would have to like deal with the repercussions of that, even though he wasn't like in control.
Yeah. Right?
But it's not even that. It's just like something random that he can't really control falls down on Donna Troy and she dies. And I'm like, what the fuck was that? It was so weird.
If they didn't have to fight Superboy, they wouldn't be standing right there during this thunderstorm.
Even still, like, it was just such a strange way to end the season, and it like really rubbed me the wrong way, because I was like, that was just nothing. She just died for nothing.
Yeah, that's
for no
super
reason.
Dumb. I don't like that at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, so
I'd rather someone kill her.
Yeah, me too. I want to see her die.
Did
but
the,
not
like the
that.
Light portion, like where it like bends, did it like go through her and like impale her?
No, I can't remember specifically because I've blocked it out of my head. I wonder if I can look it up.
See, that's the kind of ending I wouldn't want to look forward to. Is it kind of like Doom Patrol, to where it's like weird, but you like it for some reason?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'd say Doom Patrol's a little bit better. Okay, this is it. Come here.
Oh, shit.
All right, yeah, okay. So everything's all good and nice. And like everybody's pretty clear at this point. I think she could just let it fall and people would be good.
Oh, she's trying to like help.
She's trying to like hold it up. And then she falls on it. And that's it. But that was completely unrelated to all the like Superboy stuff that happened. She just dies like that.
She just gets electrocuted?
She gets electrocuted and she's like dead now. So I don't know why it happened that way. It seemed very strange and just random at the time. So I was like, what the hell was that?
Huh. I mean, I guess you made it sound like a light pole in the street just fell over and like hit her head. And
I just remember a big pole that probably wouldn't have killed anybody because people know how to run left or right.
Yeah.
But she decides to jump in and
like,
then gets electrocuted.
Get under this shit.
I don't know. Yeah. So it was very strange. But anyway, I'll probably still watch season 3 Titans because I've known that the Red Hood storyline was going to be like the main point in it. And I really liked the Jason Todd character in that show.
I thought they did that in season 2. So when they like showed this, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So
No. It was season 2 was more like, here's Jason Todd now.
Uh-huh.
whereas season one was like Robin turning into Nightwing. So, yeah. So there's some pretty solid stuff in there.
I think they're going to have like Batwing too. They showed him because I guess like, what's his name? Lucius Fox's kid is in the show.
Okay.
And so he's going to be Batwing.
Sweet. That works for me.
Yep. And
I think that's all the news I have though.
This isn't news, but I just kind of came across this. Apparently Batman Earth 1 Volume 3 came out.
Yeah, it came out this week.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck?
Isn't just, that
like,
crazy?
It was just so like not on my radar. I have to like go to the comic shop more so I just remember what comes out.
Yeah, it's weird because like Geiger is coming out right now too. So you would think like Gary Frank, I don't know. I guess Gary Frank was working on Earth 1 Volume 3 between Doomsday Clock and Geiger.
Maybe it's like,
which makes sense because that's a pretty significant gap, I guess.
I follow like both of them, so I'm like, why haven't I just gotten like a reminder about this kind of thing?
Yeah.
So it's like they maybe, I know they make more money from Geiger, but still, you know,
I don't know. Maybe.
Anyway,
but yeah, I really love the first two volumes. I think Volume 2 is like one of my favorite Batman stories. So
100%.
That'd be kind of cool if we did it on the show.
Our cousin married a comic fan and he like was trying to get into like Batman stuff, and that was like one of the three Batman trades that I gave him.
Nice.
And so it's really up there.
Yeah, it's like a, I mean, that's what Earth One is. It's just supposed to be accessible for people that don't really know how comics work.
Yeah, and it's just like, I think it's just cool for comic fans too.
I think it'd be kind of cool to do like a subscription box for like comics people that don't know what they're doing, and it would be like every month you get like, here's some trades of good comic stuff that you don't have to know a whole lot of continuity for, as long as you just know the basics.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a great idea. You pay like, well, like $20 a month and you get like three trades or something.
Yeah.
That'd be dope.
That'd be kind of neat.
Be like, hey, you can just start here.
Yeah.
And be fine.
Yeah.
But getting three trades a month, that's kind of a lot to read if like, I guess we read four a month.
Yeah. That's fair. That's pussy shit.
we can build this company and then subscribe to it to ourselves.
We can call
and
it
save some money. And then
we could call it the Trade Waiters. pull list box. Shove it in your box. Well, that's a working title. I'll have to cut this part out. This is a great idea.
Yeah, man. We can't let anyone take it.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid it's already a thing.
It probably is. We'll have to look into it. But anyway.
I saw one for like vinyls. I'm like, that's weird.
That is weird.
It just seems like not something people would look up. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's all the news I have.
But pretty this brief. Week, we are reading the trade Bitterroot.
Correct. It is by David F. Walker, Chuck Brown, and Sanford Green. Sanford Green is doing like the pencils and the inks, I'm pretty sure, for it. And there is also Rico Renzi and Sanford Green on colors. And then Clayton Callas is doing the lettering. So pretty baller team. I mean, I know David Walker from some Marvel stuff. He's done like Luke Cage. He's done Power Man and Iron Fist with Sanford Green, actually.
Yeah, I remember that. I think he did Nighthawk.
Nighthawk.
I could be wrong though. Like the dude in
Is it Sanford Squadron Green?
Supreme.
Is Sanford Green doing Sea of Stars?
I have no clue.
I think that's him, to be honest. But yeah, he's a great artist. Honestly, a really great creative team. And this book is pretty wild. So we're reading this book because it's Eisner nominated, and I forget actually what it's Eisner nominated for. I think it's just like best continuing series, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me see, I can pull it up.
Yeah, right, he did Nighthawk.
David F. Walker did.
Yeah,
I don't know who Chuck Brown is, but yeah, Bitterroot's nominated for best continuing series, so we decided to read it. So what were your just initial impressions just after reading it?
I think I had like held it to like a bit of a higher standard, just from, you know, the buzz of being an Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
It's a good book. There's a lot of themes that resonate with me.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting, for sure. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think David F. Walker did well, just based off of other things that I've read from him.
Yeah.
A lot of the subplots were interesting, which is something that I liked. I think this is going to be, like, really hard to adapt. Because at least it'll be like a dumbed down, watered down version of this because of how much is happening.
Probably.
And how many like special effects would be needed in order to be like,
panel for panel. Sure. Yeah. Cause it's being adapted into a movie, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I feel like there would, I mean, maybe special effects won't be that big of a deal, but I definitely feel like it'll be less of the subplots that are in here. And because it kind of feels like this book is interesting because it focuses on like a family rather than like a main character.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. And I think he balances it well. But it just kind of, for me, I think that this book is good because of the messages that it's trying to send. Because it's very centered around like, I guess, police brutality and like racism and things like that.
Yeah.
And how like, how that is kind of represented in this book, I think is really cool.
Gender inequality.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. And it's the setting of it's really good because it's during the Harlem Renaissance in the 1920s.
Yeah.
And I think that that setting is awesome as well. But I think definitely what carried this book for me was Sanford Green's art, because
the art there is like are everything.
No details wasted. Like every single splash page that's full of detail has its own, like each individual person in there, each individual thing is fleshed out in like to completeness, I guess.
The colors are like absolutely nuts.
The colors are definitely like some of the most impressive I've ever seen. Like it's such a great color palette and it changes like per scene, but they're still just as wild.
Yeah, and it feels like it's like takes place in that era too for some reason.
Yeah, it feels like that sort of like funky and like fresh sort of like vibe. I don't really know, but as far as like the writing, like I wasn't like too crazy about it. Like I like the messages, but it felt like as far as the story goes, it felt like act one was like, if this was a movie, it felt like act one was like 20 minutes and then it skipped act two and just went to act three for like 2 hours.
Right. Yeah. I know what you mean.
So it kind of just felt like things were just like moving like faster and faster as we went on. But
yeah, the only issue I had with the art is like, so there's monsters in this and yep. there's different kinds of monsters in this, and so it was kind of hard to differentiate what kind of monster they were dealing with.
I wrote down why I think I was confused about that too.
Okay,
gotcha. Once we get there,
they're still sick looking, but just as far as like the plot device, like hey, this monster's different than the other one, that was like a little bit hard to identify.
Yeah,
but anyway, we'll get into it. We can kind of talk about
chapter one basically. So like I said, the story takes place during the Harlem Renaissance in Harlem, New York in 1924. So there's like a big cultural evolution going on in this time with like African-American music and dance and art and all that. And in Harlem Square there's these monsters that come out called the Jinnu, which are created when normal people essentially succumb to evil, hate, and violence. That's when they become the Jinnu. And they're kind of like these monster slash devilish looking things. But you can kind of tell when like someone's turned into a Jinnu because they've turned into like a monster. And so basically the Jinnu are racist people that turn into monsters and attack other people in Harlem is what we end up fighting out. So the focus of the story is this... The Sangiri? Sangiri?
I didn't write it down, but... I just said, like, Sanger?
I think it's Sangiri.
Well, wrong.
The Sangiri family? S-A-N-G-E-R-Y-E. Sangiri?
Sangiri, yeah.
Yeah, so the Sangiri family is basically dedicated to both fighting off and curing the Jinnu for just to protect their local community. And so they cure the Jinnu with a serum called Fifnu, which is also a fun name.
Yeah.
Fifnu. Which is derived from a special root, which is why the book is called Bitter Root. Mm-hmm. So these first few pages are really good at like setting the stage, I think, because it's just like people in Harlem in like a club playing like jazz music and there's notes all over the crowd and every individual person like has a different face. I feel like Sanford Green's like really good at just like paying attention to detail like that.
Oh yeah.
And he has like, it's almost like, I don't know, like caricature like level detail with like each person.
Yeah,
because they have like just that crazy like level of emotion. I think it's really cool, honestly.
Yeah, definitely.
And then obviously the coloring is pretty incredible. Like there's nobody in here that's like a normal skin color because the coloring has chosen to like make it a shade of pink or like a dark shade of green or anything like that.
Yeah,
so I think that that also like helps keep my attention throughout the book. Mm-hmm. But so anyway, in the family we have Ma Etta and Blink, who are the two girls of the family, basically. And they are in the Sangiri like community kitchen. I don't know what you'd even call it. It's like a shop, basically, where they like serve people in the community.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I just thought it was like a restaurant at first, and this is like the kitchen.
Yeah.
But now that they're making these like kind of
these like serums
or whatever, cures, It might be some sort of like shop, but I guess like cops to kind of bring like the Jinnu. I read as Jinnu in my head, but it doesn't really matter. So I guess they like just bring them to the family.
I guess so. Yeah, and I'm not.
They just take care of them, I guess.
I'm not really sure what the dynamic there is, but yeah, I think they're there to sort of take care of the community, which is cool because it seems like Harlem's like a pretty tight knit community like that.
Right.
So Ma, Etta, and Blink are the two girls that are kind of doing the kitchen stuff, but they are listening to a fight on the roof, which has Berg, who's a big smart man with a sweet beard, and then there's Colin, who's like a younger guy that's being trained to fight off the Jinnu. And it's pretty clear that Berg is like really smart because he talks very smart. He reminds me of
Savoy,
yeah, from Chew, because he just talks in like a certain dialect that no one could possibly like.
Right click synonyms like that.
Yeah.
On Microsoft Word.
Yeah, just like a big thesaurus talking. So, I mean, it's very identifiable, like, trait about the character, which is cool. But Blink is, and she's hearing this going on, she thinks that she could do it better, so she breaks the typical, like, almost like gender norm and goes off to fight the Jinnu for Colin, who's, like, having a hard time kind of doing it.
Yeah.
So, that's sort of, it kind of sets the stage. So, like, Blink is a fighter and Colin isn't really that much, but he's trying to be sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Berg gives off hella Mason Savoy vibes. I really like this page where Blink is like fighting off the monster, and it's this one because it has like Colin almost centered in on the page, and it doesn't really matter the order that you're like reading it because they're all panels of like action, and it kind of gives off the same, you know, the same sequence in your head. So I think that Sanford Green is like really creative with that, where there's not really like much of an order that you need to follow as far as reading, because it all, no matter what way you take with it, it creates the same message. And I think that's kind of unique.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He definitely goes all out in this book. In the action scene, there's like the speed lines of someone, of like the Jinnu getting hit. And I think that always works really well. But Colin has his like face of just like amazement. And he's like, holy shit, like what is Blink doing? And I think that that's emoted really well as well.
Yeah, facial expressions are like really well done in this.
Yeah, so that's kind of something. So Blink kind of makes her point, like she can roll with the boys basically.
Yeah.
But later that night, Berg and Colin are approached by some cops while they were trying to rescue some people from the Jinnu, and the cops are like very suspicious of them, and then they focus their guns at them. But there's a Jinnu that's approaching them from behind, and Berg is trying to warn the cops, which turns into the cops like getting more stressed out, and they shoot at Berg, and I guess he's able to like stop it with like a staff, just like an anime character. Like, I don't really know what happened there.
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
But he stops all the bullets and he's fine, but then the Jinnu from behind kills the cops, and then it overpowers Berg and kind of like slaps him off. So I think with this there's like a really cool tension build up with like the cops, because the panels themselves start to like overlay over each other as it gets more and more tense. And then it kind of builds up to this like this panel, I guess you can call it, that takes up the whole page, which is just the cop firing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And again, this is at night and it's kind of in a park, so the color palette just kind of turned to like green, which is like much different from like the purple that we were kind of working with when they were on top of the roof. So I like that each scene is like such a drastically different color palette.
Yeah, that definitely helps.
Yeah. So there's that happened. And then the same night in Mississippi, there's a black man that's getting attacked by the Ku Klux Klan members, and he's about to be hung, but then an assassin dude comes out, and then he shoots all of them down, and he's got a sweet gun. So that's everything that kind of happens in this first trade. So kind of right off the bat, there's like a lot going on. You don't really know who to focus on. And I think you, as a reader, like I kind of understood that it was like you focus on the family, not really like an individual, but I was still trying to like figure that out at this point.
Yeah, I kind of like the Irwin people write it in the way where you're just kind of dropped into a situation.
Yeah.
Like, right, and it's not at the beginning of this, like, the Jinnu popping up, or, like, at the end. It's just kind of, like, right in the middle. And so, it's not like this is how our story begins kind of thing. It's just like, here we are, and then we kind of figure it out as we go.
Yeah, it's like, this is how they live. This is the world.
Yeah, an issue I had with the writing is like I like that it started that way, but I still like felt kind of confused as it was going along.
Yeah,
like the characters didn't really like connect for me, and I just felt a little bit confused. I don't want him to like tell me what happened, but more like show me. And I just don't think there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
In order for me to feel like I understand what's happening.
Yeah. And I also got a little bit confused with like the whole Sangaree family. Cause like, I forgot who Blink was for a little bit in like the next few issues.
I think that's who like Regina King will play.
Oh, that'd be well.
So that's like, really? That's what I was thinking when I was reading this. I'm like, all right, Regina King's going to be in this maybe.
Is that confirmed, or I thought she was just directing?
Oh, you might be right.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to be like in it.
No, so no, no, like, she's directing.
She's a badass. She's probably going to be Blink and just kick some genie ass.
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay. So then she's probably not the main character then.
Yeah.
So I don't think there really is like a main protagonist. It's just kind of the family.
Right.
Which is a cool dynamic.
It is cool. Yeah. So, yeah. And then in between each chapter, there's like one of the variants. And this first one is a Mike Mignola variant. Which is crazy. Dude. And it looks awesome. Like, Berg looks so good. Same thing with Ma Etta. She's, like, posed in, like, a really, like, funny way.
Yeah, it looks like a classic Mike Mignola cover.
Yeah, it's awesome. But anyway, issue two, it continues that same scene with the KKK members. And all but one of the members turn into a Janu, even though that they were already dead, presumably. Because he shoots them down and they're already dead. But I guess they turn into Janu. And they start to attack as monsters. And so they're all gunned down again, except for one kind of young white dude who says, like, he was telling the guy that shoot them all down that he killed them all in cold blood. Even though this assassin dude, whose name is Ford, he's Ford Sangaree, so he's part of the Sangaree family.
Mm-hmm.
He brings up that they were about to kill that black man in cold blood. So, and like, it's very likely that they would kill many other people. So he kind of pulled like the old like switcheroo or like the old know you kind of card.
Yeah.
Because he kind of brings up that point. They are KKK members. But so the one white kid didn't really turn into Janu himself because his soul is still clean. And it kind of brings up that concept of he hasn't spilled any blood yet. So he himself didn't turn into a Janu because his mind hasn't been corrupted yet. Is right. The idea. So this kid says that he can help Ford find some of the other Janu that are kind of running around. And they kind of just ride off together. So this white kid's kind of an interesting character because he seems to take the perspective of, I didn't know that they were going to try and kill that dude, but I don't know what he was expecting at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. But meanwhile, back with Berg and Colin, Berg is knocked out from the Janu. He's like a big bird looking dude, but then it turns out he's not a Janu. He's kind of like a different breed.
He's a big bird, Nathan?
I call him Big Bird the whole time. So Colin tries to step in and fight, but he's not very good at fighting it, so he just gets thrown off. And the Big Bird says he's not Janu, and then he just takes the two survivors that they were trying to save earlier, and then he leaves.
Yeah, he's like, can talk.
He can talk, so that, which like, Janu do not do.
And then he like knew who they were.
Yeah.
Which like is also Berg strange. And Colin, so.
And so Colin brings Berg back home, and it's revealed that the bird wasn't Janu. It was something else because Berg was also infected by this big bird, and now he's turned into a big monster himself, which is not something that typically happens with Janu. So this is like the thing where, like, I feel like at this point in the story, I'd just kind of nailed down what a Janu is, and then now you're introducing a whole different breed of them that now I have to kind of keep track of.
Right.
So it was kind of weird for me reading it and being like, okay, that big bird's a Janu.
Seems like a second trade kind of thing.
Yeah.
At least like fourth issue, but.
Yeah. So, and now Berg has just turned into a big monster himself, but.
He's like, he's not really a monster. He just like turns green.
Who?
Berg.
Well, I think
he still looks like Berg, but he's like green now.
He's like, he doesn't have any pupils anymore in that form.
Okay, but he's not a bird.
He's not a bird, yeah. But he turns green and like kind of a little bit more feral, I guess, throughout the story. Yeah,
and he's like, hey, I got infected.
Yeah,
he's like the same. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah, he basically just turns into Shrek,
or like a bearded Hulk kind of thing.
Yeah, that would work too. Probably a little bit better, actually. We do also see a glimpse of the big bird bringing back the two survivors to a sketchy doctor named Sylvester. Mm-hmm. He's in San Juan, I guess, and this guy is collecting souls that have been cleansed with the fifth new serum. For a mysterious reason. We don't really know why. But we also find out that this man was a Tulsa massacre survivor, which seems to somehow be motivating his actions.
Okay.
So he ends up being like the big bad.
And then like the big bird.
Big Bird?
Or whatever. Big Bird just turns into like this woman. And I guess they're dating or something.
Oh, is that what happens?
Yeah. So look at this page.
The big bird's the woman?
He puts like his hand on her. And
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, I had to.
So Big Bird is love interest of the doctor guy.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I get that. So anyway, that's the end of issue two. And in issue three, we focus back on Ford, again, who's the assassin. And he goes to the house of some old black dude who has like a Confederate flag hanging off of his house. And this guy turns into a monster himself and tries to kill Ford.
That dude's not black.
Isn't he?
No, dude. He's like, picture like,
is he
white trash? That's like what I saw. Oh, okay. He might be like,
well, the coloring is like he's orange, so it almost looked like he was, but no, I think you're right. He is white.
Because of how racist he was being, I imagine.
Which is why I thought it was strange. Yeah, he's very racist and he's throwing out the N-word, or this world's version of the N-word, which is a little bit different, but still just bad.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay, so he's a white guy. He's very racist.
And that's how the Ku Klux, the Klan member, like, knew where to find him.
Oh, because
he's also racist.
Gotcha. Well, that makes way more sense. So
we're getting to this together, Nathan.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So the guy turns into a monster. He tries to kill Ford and the kid, but he gets stopped eventually. But he wasn't a Jinnu, because Ford says that Jinnu is a man that turns to a devil, but this was a devil trying to imitate a man,
mm-hmm.
which is strange.
Yeah, and this guy turns into like a big green
goblin-looking dude.
Goblin-looking thing.
Yeah, so that happens. And then also Dr. Sylvester gains weird powers from those Klan survivors, and he vows to kill the plague of hate, which I assume is just racist people.
Yeah.
So something like that. That's his motivation. And then back with Berg, he gets locked down and like strapped down because he looks like a big monster now. And Colin suggests to get Uncle Enoch involved, who might know a little bit more about this stuff. And we don't really know much about him, but Blink kind of denies that option because she says that he's responsible for breaking up or even killing some of the family. So
yeah,
so they don't really like him at all.
It's like Blink's family, or Blink's parents and Colin's parents are like dead, and they're saying it's because of him.
Are they cousins?
I think so. I just assumed everyone here was like cousins.
Okay.
And then Ma Etta was like the grandma.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I would assume so.
I think
too.
Like Ford is like a cousin as well.
Yep.
They're just all like cousins.
Yeah. They're either Grandma Etta or uncles or cousins, it seems like.
Yeah.
So in this, I really like the first two pages of this issue because the first page is like setting up the first three scenarios, which is just some stuff happening in Harlem, some stuff happening with Berg and the family, and then some stuff happening with Ford. And then in the second page, it's like a double page spread, and it still has those three scenarios like top, bottom, and middle, but it's kind of spread throughout the double page spread. And I really like that format because normally with a double page spread it's just like one big scene, but this one's still stretching out like the three of them.
It's like a Neapolitan of plots.
Yeah, and it keeps the same color palette with each situation, so that's a really effective way, I think, to demonstrate like what situation you're in, because Harlem was just like all blue and stuff with all the cops, and then the Berg stuff, he's green, so I think they went with like a green sort of color palette, and then I don't know, the rest of it was just orange.
The Mississippi stuff
was orange,
right? So, yeah, no, I didn't realize that. I was reading it like panel for panel, so I just thought that's how it
went. That's why I don't do that. I miss things like that. That's really creative though.
Yeah, no, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great use of the page. So anyway, all the cops in Harlem are becoming corrupt and they start turning into the Jinnu, so it's starting to become a real problem.
So, yeah, there's like a couple murders. Oh, shit. There's a couple murders that they're investigating. You know, the ones that the Big Bird just took.
Yeah.
And so they're like, no one's going to believe that a monster took this. So mm-hmm. they're just like beating on people.
Yeah.
For like no reason. It's fucking crazy.
It is crazy. So then Colin goes to find Uncle Enoch despite his family's orders. But he's doing it in an attempt to save Berg from his weird monster form. And he finds Uncle Enoch in a strange building after being attacked by his little guard dog creatures. They're not dogs at all, really. They're like
psycho bunnies.
Yeah.
I thought these were Jinnu too.
They look like little Jinnu, but they're dogs.
So I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But they're good. They're like his pets or something.
Yeah, they respond to Uncle Enoch. We have no idea what the fuck these guys are. Like, I don't know why he has little Jinnu-looking dogs.
He like,
or why he has 1,000 of them.
He seems to know more about this stuff than they do.
Yeah.
And so I imagine he'd have like kind of a lab where he just experiments with shit.
Yeah. So I think that's why Colin went to him in the first place, is because he clearly knows a little bit more about this stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this feels like a second trade kind of character as well.
Yeah.
Like, once you establish, like, the grounds, I feel like you can start fucking with it. But I feel like the writing sets it up where, like, there's a few pages in issue one where it's like, here's the idea, and then they immediately start fucking with it. So,
yeah,
it just kind of, like, turns into just, like, you're just kind of, like, rolling with whatever happens, and you don't really, like, try and understand it that much, I think. At least that's what I started to do, because I was like, there's so much
new content,
like, being introduced, it's hard to follow it all.
I just, like, keep pushing forward. I'm like, hopefully I'll understand it at the end.
And I think, yeah, I mean, I guess to his credit, like, I did kind of understand everything by the end.
Yeah.
So, it's just weird. But anyway, so Uncle Enoch is there, and Colin says that they need his help to cure Berg, and so he's trying to get him recruited. Meanwhile, Berg breaks free of his restraints, and he starts acting kind of like feral and aggressive, but Ma Etta pulls up into the fight, and she threatens to even end his life to protect the family, and then she, like, punches him with, like, a Fifno, like, gauntlet that, like, injects a bunch into him. Even though it doesn't cure him, it will, like, still knock him out. So, like, Ma Etta, like, really stepped up and started, like, being a badass in the scene.
Yeah, she's such a badass. She's my favorite character, probably.
Honestly, she's so, like, she's like, if Inanna was, like, an anime character.
Yeah, honestly. For sure.
Just, like, not afraid to get her hands dirty. And, like, I really like this Fifno gauntlet that she pulls out, because it's like Wolverine, but with, like, syringes of serum.
Yeah.
So, I think that's pretty funny.
I kept thinking, like, there's so many weapons in this, and we don't really know what any of them do, but I don't think you really need to, because it's just, like, the way that they're used. I'm like, oh, that probably helps somehow.
Yeah.
And they're just, like, cool to look at.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the cooler.
Yeah, I think all the action pieces are, like, cool to look at, because I feel like whenever he does action, he does something specific to the page, which makes it interesting. So in this one where Ma Etta was, like, fighting Berg, the panels are all long, but they're slanted and kind of, like, creating weird shapes over each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really interesting as well. But also, he does really well with, like, speed lines and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really cool. And I love Ma Etta. She's a great character. So, and then finally, Ford Sangari, the assassin dude, tells the white kid about he calls them gatekeepers, which is, like, that separate breed of Janu.
Who said that?
Ford does.
Oh.
And he basically says that they're monsters that come from someplace else pretending to be man, and they come from, like, a specific gate that is, like, a different world. And he decides that he needs to go to Harlem to help his family because there's something big coming, basically. In the scene, Ford holds up a map at one point that points to every place that the Janu have attacked, but it's just a picture of the United States, and they're all colored the same. So
there's, like, some dots on there.
I couldn't tell if that was, like,
I'm like, okay, got everything.
Yeah. It looks like a picture of the United States, and it's like, all right, cool, they're everywhere. Like, it doesn't, like, matter that there's even a map.
Yeah, it looks like some splatter, but I don't know if that's, like, oh.
I couldn't tell if those were, like, the specific points, because you can't really see any in New York specifically.
I just figured the whole world would be like this.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. So it's just a little strange that scene was in there, but oh well. And then to end the scene, Dr. Sylvester turns into his own kind of demon form, and he starts calling himself, like, the Archangel. So he gets super buff. He gets, like, super buff, actually. Like, he was kind of a skinny guy before, and he gets, like, ripped. And he's got a sweet beard now.
Yeah.
And his eyes turn red and all that. But he's calling himself the Archangel, and he's going to Harlem, where there's a bunch of cops turning to Janu. And he takes one of the Janu cops, and he rips the head off of him, saying that he is, like, the retribution or whatever.
Yeah.
So he really, like, thinks highly of himself to, like, cure racism or something.
I mean, he's pretty strong now, because I'm like, is this guy a genie now or whatever? But I really don't know.
I don't think that he is.
He's, like, the one of the better ones or whatever,
I guess.
And so I didn't know that this was Dr. Sylvester at the time. I thought this was just a monster that showed up.
Yeah, you have to really be paying attention. I had to, like, go back and, like, figure out what was going on.
Yeah, Sylvester kind of has, like, it's kind of built like Chris Rock, but then, like, he like this, he's like Jason Momoa.
He's like The Rock.
Yeah, like The Rock. Yeah, exactly.
From Chris Rock to The Rock. Yeah. It's basically that character transformation.
And so that was, like, confusing for me.
Yeah, it is a little bit weird. It's a pretty dope end scene, though, because he takes the Janu, which you would think he would use to his advantage or something, and then he just rips his head off, and mm-hmm. that's how the sequence ends. So I like that a lot.
I don't know if you noticed this, but like the Singiri family, they make that cure or whatever, and then like turn the genie back into people again.
Yeah.
But Ford just like straight up like kills him.
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably like a reason why they kind of separated, and like Ford just kind of rides solo.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they're different, you know, points of view on how to handle the situation.
Yeah.
And so I just thought that was kind of cool.
Which, I mean, I guess with that knowledge, like it seems like Dr. Sylvester's also just planning to kill everybody. So mm-hmm. I don't know why they view Ford as like, you know, a good guy is like part of the family, where Sangari or Sylvester is just doing the same thing.
I mean, I don't know if we know that the cure even works, because have we
the fifth no?
Yeah,
cure?
The fifth no.
Yeah, it works.
So it brings them back to like their.
But I think they can get infected again.
Okay.
Which is not a good thing.
Hmm. All
right. So I don't know if it's like completely 100% correct, but yeah, you are right. There is like clearly different methods of getting rid of the Genu.
Yeah.
Where most of the Sangari family tries to like save them, because they put them in like those little boxes in the first issue, and then they use the serum to turn one guy back into a person, and that happens in the first issue. But
right.
So that's kind of established that that can work that way. But yeah, it seems like Ford just kills them with a sweet gun. So I don't know.
Nathan, we passed by the Bill Sienkiewicz cover, the variant for number two.
Let me see.
Did you see that?
Oh, I didn't even read that was Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, isn't that dope?
That's banger. Yeah, and then the one for issue four is Scotty Young.
Scotty Young.
And it's awesome. He draws a great, like a great Maeta.
Yeah.
Because it has like all the weird Genu dogs on him. And this is very fun. So issue four, Maeta is threatening to kill Berg if she needs to, because Berg kind of went crazy like last issue. But Berg, who's now more in control, it seems like, says that he can help Blink fight off the crazy Genu fight that's going on in Harlem if he's set free. So Maeta decides to let him go, and he starts to fight with Blink. And at the same time, Cullen pulls up with Uncle Enoch in like his weird car with all the Genu dogs, and they're all there too. So the family's like coming together, basically, is what's happening. So they all help to get a bunch of civilians to safety in the Sangari shop. And in the shop, Maeta is like dealing with a man turning into a Genu himself, and she has to fight him off until Ford Sangari comes in and helps as well. So now the whole family's here. It's a big old family reunion.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like Maeta's character, because she's, in the beginning, she was like, we need to make these serums while the boys fight or whatever. And now we kind of know that she'll fight if she needs to and like hold back a Genu, but also she understands the importance of supporting like the local community at a time of like violence by keeping them safe in this like their food kitchen or whatever, and like giving them food and everything. So she understands the importance of like making the community feel safe, not just like, I guess, fighting the fight in a different way.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is great. So yeah, now the whole family's back together, and Cullen and Enoch run into Dr. Sylvester, and he's in his demon form or whatever. And Dr. Sylvester says that he's there to stop the hate with his monsters that he can now control. But they're not the Genu, they're the other one, I think.
Wait, Dr. Sylvester?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just got like this.
He's got this gang, like army.
Do they have a name? Or are they just the big ones?
I think they end up being called like, it's right here, I remember.
Oh yeah, it's like
in Zondo.
Yeah.
But I don't ever really call him that.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it's mentioned literally one time, and I'm like, okay, interesting, I guess. And then they don't call him that again. But anyway, so Dr. Sylvester has his own breed of monsters that he can control now. They're not Genu, and there's a big fight. And then at the end of this issue, Cullen gets sucked into the gateway that is created.
Yeah, it's like some sort of like portal kind of thing. It's like a rip in reality.
And it like goes to what essentially is just hell, but I don't think they'd necessarily call it that. It's just like a gateway to another place where there's a bunch of monsters living.
That's like the Nether or something.
Yeah, the Nether. That's a good way to put it.
So
that's what happens at the end of this.
Did you? And there's also like a detail that they brought up, is that black people don't turn into Genu.
Yeah, yeah, because they're the one that, I mean, they're not really ones that are going to be racist, you know,
yeah,
or like have that sort of hate or evil as like a part of them.
Yeah, they say like hate, greed, or like evil.
And
evil.
Evil. It's only the evil white people that are going to do it. But essentially, that's like, I mean, that's the metaphor, right? It's just they're getting sort of oppressed, and they have to fight a fight in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it makes sense. But yeah, it's just kind of like a law in this universe, is that just black people don't turn into Genu.
Right.
Which I feel like makes sense in this context. So, and then the last issue, the variant actually for this one is by David Mack, who's like really good. He's a big like watercolor multimedia guy.
Yeah, I see that. It's pretty cool.
I think he did some of the Jessica Jones.
Oh, that looks familiar. Yeah. Like the Incognito.
The covers.
Or what was
Alias?
Alias.
No, that was that wasn't David Mack, but the covers I think was David Mack.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, because it looks all like splashy and watercolory.
Yeah, this is dope.
Yeah, really good. But anyway, so issue 5, Colin lands in the gateway of this new land or hell or whatever, and he gets picked up by some masked figure who like takes him away, and I'm like, that's weird, but okay. And then
I'm like, that's good, probably.
Yeah, it seems like another person's there to help him out. And then the whole Sangari family are now fighting Janu and the new breed of monster, the Inzondo or whatever, and Dr. Sylvester. But they're all fighting as a family now because they're all coming together at a time of need. And they're basically debating whether or not they need to try to close the gate with Colin inside, because I guess, you know, no one's ever come out of that gate before. So they have to make the decision, like, do they close it now and just consider him dead, or do they want to like try at the risk of more monsters coming out?
Uh-huh.
And the fight eventually breaks up, and I guess like Dr. Sylvester leaves for a little bit because the big bird comes into the fight and gets hurt, which is actually, it makes sense now that that's Dr. Sylvester's love, because he leaves and like goes to a tunnel or something, and Big Bird in human form dies in his arms.
Yeah, that took me a second to...
it makes a lot more sense that she's Big Bird, because I'm like,
because I'm Big Bird. It's like this big crow, black crow looking thing.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
then she's like super buff. Like, I mean, there's not any indication that it's like a girl or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just like a big monster, and you don't see her transition back from Big Bird into woman. So they go under the city, and this girl that's Dr. Sylvester's love interest dies in his arms, and I'm like, how did she get hurt? I didn't see that at all, but it makes sense that she's Big Bird.
Who the fuck is this?
Yeah, exactly.
So me not knowing who Sylvester was, I was like, okay,
yeah,
monster girlfriend or whatever. So,
but I guess it was Ford that shot Big Bird.
Nice.
So good on him. So anyway, Sylvester's love interest dies, and now he's even more mad. So that's not good. And then meanwhile, the whole Sangari family are kind of stretched thin, trying to fight Janu physically but also help people in their shop. And then Ma Etta says that she's going to stay in the shop and feed them and keep them safe, because she's not going to turn her back on the people in need, which is awesome.
Yeah,
so she's got a cool role on all this, I think. Also, I think in the last issue we saw her hair, which is like these sweet like white dreadlocks.
Oh yeah, dude.
And I love that.
It's shit. Badass.
Because they were kind of hidden in like a headdress that she's wearing.
Yeah.
And so when I saw her hair, I was like, oh shit, she's getting real now. So
there's a little bit when Uncle Enoch's like trying to fight Sylvester, mm-hmm. and he like just pulls out this like magic shit that he's trying to do, where he like does shit with his fingers, and it has like no effect on Sylvester, but it's still like cool that there's like kind of more to this, like some magic kind of shit.
I think I missed that.
Like, see here?
Oh yeah, he does kind of throw some magic at him.
Some sort
he?
Of voodoo thing. He's obviously not very good at it, but that may come up later as being like a main point.
Yeah, he's like a magic guy.
Yeah, just like how much research he's probably put into a lot of this stuff.
Uh-huh. Cool. Yeah, I didn't even notice that. That's a cool, like, it's probably like foreshadowing for sure that he can do a little bit more than meets the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now that things are a little bit, I don't know, is there still a fight, big fight going on? Because Sylvester's not there, but there's people still fighting Janu.
Yeah, I think
so. That's maybe it's happening. Not as big of a fight. I don't know. But anyway, Uncle Enoch ends up being able to cure Berg back into a person, because he's been like a big Hulk Berg this whole time. But Berg can still sense Dr. Sylvester coming back, and he ends up attacking the Sangari shop. So he's like there at the actual shop. At the same time, the gateway opens back up in the sky, and there's two masked people or costumed people that jump through, and they fight with the family. And eventually, Sylvester and his army are overrun, and they have to retreat with the help of these, because they're getting fought off by these two people along with the family. And so they have to leave. And the two masked people don't run after them because they say that they need to help the people in the shop. And it ends up that the two masked people are basically one of the moms who they thought was dead.
It's Blink's mom.
Blink's mom, who she thought was dead. And then it's Colin, who's now a lot older than he was before. And he's basically warning them that they need to get ready for hell. And that's how this, that's how the whole trade ends. Mm-hmm. So I guess, I mean, how old do you think Colin was before? He was probably like 15-ish.
Oh, I was thinking like 25.
Really?
But like a scrawny 25.
Oh, he seemed like...
Now maybe he's like 40 probably, here.
Yeah, he's like definitely much older. He's got some scruff on his chin and stuff, which he didn't have before. But yeah, clearly he's like a lot older and a lot tougher now. So I don't know how time works because it seems like mom is a relatively mom age.
Yeah, because it made it seem like she's been gone for a while.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I don't know.
Time passes differently in the nether or whatever.
Yeah, I'm just going to choose not to think about it too much. But did you know immediately when the two mask figures come out, like one of those is Colin?
No.
Really?
No.
Because I saw like at the beginning of the issue, we see Colin land and then he gets picked up by a mask thing. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. And at the end, people are jumping out of a gate. And I'm like, that's Colin. That's it.
He just gets all suited up.
Yeah, he's just all suited up. I mean, I couldn't have predicted that he was like 10, 20 years older now.
I really don't foreshadow or try and predict what happens in things.
No, true.
I just kind of like let it tell me and like let things come to me.
Yeah.
If I know what's going to happen, like in like a DC show, I'm like, oh, they might go to this because I know what happens. That's different. But like
in comics, you're just like oh, what's going on?
I hate like those like theory videos and shit. I'm like,
no.
This will probably, none of this will probably happen.
You know?
And so it's like, I just want to absorb it the way like things are written, you know? So I don't really like
that's
try
fair.
And guess the spoiler.
That's definitely a good way to approach it, especially with like TV shows for sure.
Dude, like in like movies and shit, I'm like, oh man, what a twist. And Sarah's like, that was so obvious. I'm like, I didn't know he's gonna kill his partner. I don't know.
Yeah, I had no idea who that was.
Yeah, I didn't know it was the husband, you know?
I think that the costume design though for the mom and an older Colin,
so like, dope,
so good.
Yeah, this is badass.
They kind of remind me of like Apex Legends characters.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, especially the mom. The mom actually looks like one of the characters who's like Bloodhound, I think.
Yeah.
And then Colin almost looks like Talon.
Yeah.
He's got like sort of that mask from New 52 Batman. He kind of looks like a Talon.
Yeah. But yeah,
super good. Like, I think he's got a really good sense of like design or like fashion. I don't know what you'd even call it.
Because
everybody, I mean, like, I think everybody in general is like characters are wearing like
everybody's
pretty cool outfits. Yeah, they like Ford has some drip. He's got a sweet coat on that's pretty big.
Yeah, Berg is always looking spiffy.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of this issue, he's just wearing a wife beater, but that's understandable because he was just a monster before. He can't really
have much of drip for a bit. So
yeah, anyway, that's the end of the book, and we'll go into Back Matter Matters.
Back Matter Matters,
and there is huge back matter. There is like 30 pages of back matter in this.
That's what we like, Nathan.
That's what we like because we didn't get any back matter last time. So
yeah, dude, we've had a lot of strikeouts with back matter.
Yeah,
it's always the image stuff we can depend on because all those original ideas.
Yeah, so there's tons of variants.
This is terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, like, that looks like a terrifying.
It's Jinnu. Like a realistic
demon or monster or Jinnu.
And then like Berg like looks like a real person, like it just looks like a picture of a person.
Yeah, it's like pretty stellar, honestly.
Yeah,
and there's what's really cool about this back matter is that there's a lot of like analytical essays about the work in it, and I'm not really sure like how he chose these to be in here, but I think he does. Like, David Walker teaches like comics at like a university.
Oh, no shit.
So I think that these might even be like some of his students or something, or people that I used to like teach with or work with.
Can you imagine being in a comic writer's class and you just get to read his shit?
Yeah. Well, like he teaches it with like Brian Michael Bendis.
Oh.
They're like really good pals, apparently.
Huh.
So, you know, so like I think that these essays are cool because it kind of breaks it down like a little bit further about, like, there's one about the whole idea of like, I think it's called like Afrofuturism.
Mm-hmm.
Afrofuturism, I think, which is basically just like the sort of aesthetic of African American like futurism. So like Wakanda, that whole like kind of feels like Afrofuturism. And there's like kind of a piece in here that's talking about that and like why that's important. And I think that that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of really cool good pieces, and there's a few about like famous African American like creators. And there's one for like movies, and it mentions like Jordan Peele, or there's the guy that makes Candyman or Sorry to Bother You. Like, there's like really recent works in there, which is really cool.
Nice.
So there's a couple of those essays. I didn't read them all, but there's just like a lot of that in here, which I think is pretty cool. Like, I don't ever really see that in Back Matter.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a nice addition.
There's also fan art, which is not something that you see in Back Matter. Typically, you have like people that are paid to like make cover art or whatever, but there's actually like a section that has like fan art, and he like credits them and puts their like Twitter at in there as well, which is really cool.
Let me get to that.
Yeah, it looks like this. It's on page 140.
Okay, I'm almost there.
So I think that that's pretty neat, and like it's they probably like those artists probably got paid for it to be putting their stuff in there, but it's just a really great idea, I think.
Yeah, that's super fun. And then just like a ton of variants.
Ton of variants.
Which we love. And then some character designs.
Character designs, which, I mean, they don't look... I mean, they all like pretty much look the same. Like, I think Sanford Green is like enough of a creative person to be like... He writes down a design and he's like, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, he had like a pretty good idea of like his vision for this.
Yeah, because like, I think this is one of the stories where each character can be definitely like identified in silhouette. Because, like, Berg's a big guy. Cullen's kind of, like, a scrawnier dude.
Like, Maeda's like just got, like, her headdress.
Yeah, Maeda's got the sweet headdress. So,
yeah.
All the designs are, like, really...
Oh, dude, this Michael Cho one.
Yes.
I love that, dude.
Michael Cho is so good.
It has, like, three colors in this, and it's just so dope.
There's,
That's definitely the best one. They had... I saw an eBay variant in here, so this dude was just selling variants on eBay.
I don't know what that's about. Yeah, I'm not sure why there's an eBay variant.
That's kind of cool, though.
There's a sweet Michael Del Mundo one, which kind of looks like it's graffiti almost.
And oh, that's
one,
dope.
That one looks really good.
Looks like a movie cover.
I think Mike Del Mundo always does really good covers.
He's in a lot of these, yeah.
And then at the very, very end, there's just the artist's bios or whatever you call them. Mm-hmm. Where it says like David Walker's a writer, filmmaker. He's a filmmaker? An award-winning journalist.
Wow.
And he teaches writing for comics at Portland State University. So,
oh, that's not cool. Even far. We can just walk into one of his classes.
What do you mean? Portland? Where's that at?
Oregon?
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to take a flight.
It could be in Maine or something. There's yeah, also true. Portland, Maine, but...
True. We just have to hop a few states.
Yeah, no big deal.
Chuck Brown has written The Punisher and Black Panther comics for Marvel, so he was the co-writer.
Okay. I think they work together a lot.
He's the writer and co-creator of Rotten Apple, different from Bitterroot.
Yeah. Spin-off. Oh, I guess there's... So, I guess there's a spin-off issue for this book.
It's with like Rotten Apple?
No. Sorry. It just reminded me of that. It's called, like, The Red Wedding or something like that. And I think that's Game of Thrones, but it's like that, where it tells you what happened with, like, all their parents. It's like a one-shot spin-off from this book.
Oh, cool.
But I don't think it's included in any of the trades.
Neat.
But it tells you kind of, like, what happened and why they hate Enoch and probably... What happens with, like, Ford?
Honestly, I feel like that would be a really strong part of the book to know why there's a bunch of spicy family drama.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, like, we know that they're separated. I mean, the book is kind of about the family coming together because they don't like each other or don't like most of the family or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But I think it would be kind of cool to know.
Red Summer. The Red Summer Special is what it's called.
Yeah, I feel like that would be a really great addition to, like, a trade to get some backstory and why the family even separated in the first place. Because we still don't really know. We just know that Uncle Enoch is kind of to blame for a lot of it, and it seems like Ford isn't, you know, he's a little bit too edgy for everybody. So I would like to see something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, what would you rate this book? I would give it a solid like medium, two or three topping pizza. Like it was definitely like really good, and I enjoyed it for like the ride. It was exactly kind of what I was expecting almost.
Uh huh.
So yeah, I would just give it that. I don't know if I would be like, this is like a sequential thing that you need to read kind of deal. But I guess if you're trying to read comics that like has like a strong message, this definitely has that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it sounds like something that would come from someone who teaches writing,
yeah.
You know, because of all the themes that come with it.
Mm-hmm.
If we're using the pizza example, I'd say like... Domino's $8.99 carryout meal or $7.99 carryout meal, but like
I'm not familiar with the coupons, but yeah,
it's every day.
Oh,
$7.99
cool.
Carryout. You just gotta go get it. Large three topping pizza.
Oh, a large, nice.
Killer deal. I got it all the time in college. It's a great pizza.
Yeah.
But this is like one of the situations where you can't just get like a meat lover's. You have to like let like your girlfriend pick like one or two of the toppings.
You're so specific with these.
Yeah, so let's say one of those with like chicken, and then Sarah really likes like peppers, so like some green peppers and like mushrooms.
So that's on like half the pizza, or
no? It'd be like on the whole pizza. And okay, it'd also be like chicken on there because I really like chicken on pizza.
Okay, yeah, so me too. It's the best.
It'll be a really solid pizza, but not what I would order. You know?
Okay, that's fair. That's a fair review.
Okay,
whatever that means. I mean,
I'm just trying to think of a pizza that like just as much as this book.
You know what I mean? Yes,
and that's what I came up with.
That totally makes sense. I mean, the old reason we do it that way is just because people probably know our opinions of the book by the end. So just whatever.
Yeah,
whatever random.
They're like, yeah, me too, man.
Yeah, so
Email in, tell us what your pizza.
What pizza would you equate Bitterroot to?
Yeah.
So with that, we'll go into the pull list, : shove it in your box.
The pull list, what did you shove in your box?
What did you pick up this week, Daniel?
I thought I was going to have no books today, but the stupid Fresh Comics app gave me like nothing.
It kind of sucks,
but I still have it.
I haven't found anything better.
So we're gonna pick up Jupiter's Legacy Requiem.
Oh, okay, cool.
We got Supergirl number one, Tom King.
Yep.
Silver Coin 3.
Yep.
I just saw Silver Coin. I didn't see like what number it was.
Yeah, 3.
We got Ultra Mega 4.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, Nathan,
I suck.
And then we got Stillwater 8.
I missed that one too.
Oh my god, write these down.
I do.
You obviously need it.
Yeah, so I picked up Supergirl. That's the new Tom King one.
Mm-hmm.
Crypto's on it. I've decided I'll buy anything with Crypto on the cover.
That's a big commitment because it comes up more than you think.
I don't think so.
You should try and buy every single comic that has like Crypto on the front.
I think that's a lot.
That'd be such an outrageous collection. I think it'd all fit in like a long box. Maybe even a short box. Because, like, how often is he, like,
I feel
in
like
the books, let alone on the covers?
I would do that maybe for Ace the Bat Hound, because I feel like there's significantly less.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because I feel like Ace the Bat Hound barely even exists. Like,
yeah.
And normal like Batman, like, in the Tom King Batman run, Ace the Bat Hound is in, like, one annual. But he's not, like, a dog in the story at, like, any other point. He just kind of comes up when people need him.
He's legit a dog. Like, he's not a bat dog.
Yeah.
He doesn't have an outfit.
He's just normal dog. But yeah, it'd be kind of cool to own every Ace the Bat Hound cover.
I met this dude at Comic-Con once, and he had like, he loved like Star Wars, but he collected everything R2-D2. And so like he had like R2-D2 like shirt and like hat and like glasses and shit.
Hell yeah.
And that's like, I just like imagined his house. Oh, he had like a actual life-size R2-D2 that like moved around and made noises and shit. I just couldn't imagine his house, like with how many memorabilia there is for Star Wars and like how much of his R2-D2.
Yeah.
It'd be insane.
That would be crazy. I mean, he
probably knows a cool fucking room.
He likes what he likes, man.
Yeah. And I just think that kind of collecting is like really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I also picked up, what's it called? I just read it too. It's like Legends of the Dark Knight. It's the Derek Robertson.
Yes.
The one with Batman, and I read that this week. That's the only thing I read this week. I haven't had a lot of time, actually.
Yeah, I haven't read
and
a lot of
it's yet. Still really good.
Yeah?
I think he's only on 3 issues, which is a little sad, but this one introduced like a Riddler story into this, which is really cool.
Okay.
And it turns out there's a Riddler-esque character as well named Pop Quiz, and it's a girl. And she seems pretty cool, honestly.
It reminds me of Punchline.
It's very, yeah, it's kind of that vibe, but honestly, it's like really cool. There's like a really great scene with Batman and Joker in here where it's like I would say it's like a typical scenario where he has to like save Joker, right, from dying.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can and he's able to. But then there's like a conversation that they have after, and that I think that part's really cool.
Okay.
So yeah, I read that this week, picked up Supergirl. I picked up the last 2 issues of Spider-Shadow. What was it called? The What If series with Chip?
Yeah, Spider-Shadow.
Spider-Shadow. I picked those 2 up, and then what else? There's like one other thing. I can't even remember it right now.
Are you buying that Green Lantern one that got nominated? Like Future Frontier or something like that?
Far Sector? I think it's already done, but
did you?
I've read the first few issues, but I haven't picked it up in its entirety. No.
Okay.
Fake fan. Yeah. basically. Oh, Geiger. Geiger number 3 was the last one. Last thing I picked up.
Okay.
So I'm going to read that one and see if it's worth continuing as far as from a writing perspective. Because I just read number 2 and I was like, I don't know if I'm crazy about it, but I picked
up
number 3.
Have you ever read any Jeff Johns like independent stuff?
No, he's done like one other independent thing that I'm familiar with, but I haven't read it.
What is it?
It was like way back when Image was like first starting, I think. I can't even remember the name of it, but I just remember seeing that it was Jeff Johns.
Okay.
But no, I haven't. All of the stuff I've read from him has been DC.
Yeah.
Okay. He's done some Marvel stuff.
He did a Vision run.
He did like Vision series, and then like a small Avengers thing, I think. But yeah.
Okay.
That would be interesting to read one day.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I picked up. Did you read anything this week?
No.
Yeah.
I've had no time.
I need to get on it again. We were so good for a little bit, just like reading stuff.
I know.
I need to make sure I don't fall into a deep hole again.
I'm in like a deep hole of schoolwork, so it's just like,
oh,
I
gotcha.
Should probably do that.
Nah. I just bought a 3D printer, so I was interested in that. That's why I didn't have much time.
I did watch Black Panther on our Marvel marathon.
It's great.
It's a great movie.
It's long, though.
It is long. Technically, you know, on paper.
Yeah.
But it flows really well.
I think it does too. There's a lot that's like being covered in that movie.
There's a lot to cover.
And Killmonger is still like one of the best, probably the best Marvel villain.
Easily.
Because like he's right.
You know? I'm like, he's got a point.
Like, yeah. I love that shit. Cause I'm like,
I'm kind of rooting for him too.
Yeah. Like if he.
I'm like, you know what? Black Panther's a piece of shit.
Yeah, I know. He's like, what? He's just keeping all this to himself? Like, I get his I get T'Challa's perspective, too. Because he's like, I don't want people to know about Wakanda because then our people or whatever.
Because, like, Killmonger is like, let's give the guns to all the black people that ain't being oppressed. I'm like, okay. Maybe. I get what you're going with this. And then, like, Black Panther's like, it'd be like chaos. I'm like, I think there's a middle ground here.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
It's really good.
I think. When you rewatch something, you'd like look forward to like parts that you really liked, and so that kind of helped it keep moving and not feel super long.
Yeah.
I
think the score is really good at certain points in that movie too.
Yeah, it's a Kendrick Lamar album.
Parts of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But like there's the scene where he like talks to King T'Chaka and like that weird Black Panther line.
Oh, that fucks me up.
And it's like
where he's like buried in the sand. He's like on his knees. He's like, I'm sorry. And he's like, rise. And he stands up. It's like,
you are a king. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so fucking cool.
It's very good. Yeah. There's a lot of really interesting cinematography in it, too. But yeah, great movie.
Definitely.
Me and Sophia watched Infinity War.
Oh, man. Yeah. That'd be like our next one.
Yeah.
So
it's really good. And like, very, I could tell she felt very rewarded by it because she like knows everything that was going on and stuff.
Yeah. Because
she like, she'd seen it before, but before that, the only movie she had seen was Doctor Strange and Black Panther. So
that's fucking nuts to me.
Yeah, isn't it? So it was really cool. Like, it's really cool. Like that she fucks with it so much, and I get to like experience the same excitement through her. It's very special.
I think I'm still more excited about it rewatching it with Sarah, but she's just like more tolerant of it.
Yeah,
for some reason. But yeah, I keep remembering things like little parts that were in that movie. Because I think Endgame's just a little bit fresher for me.
Yeah.
So I look forward to rewatching all those.
Yeah. So pretty good. What else? I don't think I've watched anything else, but I have actually played a video game.
Really?
Yeah. A story-based video game. It's called It Takes Two. I don't think I brought it up on here, but me and Sophia have been playing it. It's like a two-player-based game.
Uh-huh.
And the story is essentially two parents are getting divorced and their kid is kind of taking it not very well. Okay, hold on.
This is a game?
This is a game. That's like the okay, and then so she's created these two little dolls that represent her parents, and like in her mind they're like are getting together, and at one point two little magic tears falls on both of them and the two parents morph into those little dolls, and now they have to work together to try and get themselves out of this doll form. And
does the daughter know that they're in the dolls?
No, she doesn't. So they're trying to go to the daughter to see, like get us the fuck out of this kind of deal. Uh-huh. But to get there, they have to, like, work together through these, like, different puzzles and different things. And you can tell that they're slowly, like, getting to a point where they're, like, falling back in love. And it's really cool.
That sounds cool.
So, like, the story is great, but also the gameplay is really unique because the mechanics of the game change, like, every chapter. So like every 30 minutes or so, there's like a new element that's added, and then the previous element's like taken away.
Oh fuck.
So it's that's like annoying. It's like it keeps it fresh though, and there's like things that are happening. Like there's one point where you get like grappling hooks and like you solve puzzles that way, or there's one point where I almost have like Yondu powers and I have to like throw this like little pencil or something to like create platforms for Sophia's character to like swing on and stuff.
Weird.
And then one point it turned into like a flying game, and then one point it turned into like almost like a Tony Hawk pro skater type thing where you're grinding on stuff, and it's like it's really cool because it like keeps it fresh while the story is like maintaining. It's really cool.
Okay, that sounds really sick.
Yeah, and it's like very, she doesn't play video games a whole lot.
Sure.
But the mechanics are like simple enough to where it works for both of us.
Huh.
So okay. I really like the game a lot, to be honest.
Yeah, sounds cool.
And there's these like little mini games that you can find where it's just like, it's just you competing against them for like simple shit. Mm-hmm. And there's one that we found where you have to like mash buttons just faster than the other.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, great. I'm going to crush Sophia. Cause like I played Gears of War, you know, like where you have to like mash the buttons to like win the Lancer fights.
Yeah. Remember that?
So I'm like, oh yeah, fuck. I'm going to crush her. She is the fastest fucking button masher I've ever, I didn't stand a chance.
Damn.
It was like this crazy thing that I learned about Sophia that
her ex-boyfriend was a gamer.
She can button mash like no other fucking person I've ever seen. So it was kind of crazy.
When we were like waiting in lines at like Disney and shit, we were just like, she's like, do you have any games on your phone? I'm like, no, but I can find one.
You got games on your phone?
And it's like this game, it's called like 2-player games.
Nice.
And there's like tons of shit like that. Like a button smashing game. Mm-hmm. I beat her in that. I beat her in all of it.
Yeah.
But there's like racing. There's like pinball. There's like this game. And it just keeps fucking going. I haven't played all the games.
That's awesome.
There's like pool and checkers. It's really fun.
Do you play it all just on one screen?
Yeah. So I would hold it.
Oh, so she then, gets one end and you get the other?
Yeah. And the touchscreen thing.
That's dope.
It's really sick. It made the time fly.
I also discovered that Sophie used to play Army of Two.
Dude, what a good game. That's what that game reminded me of.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, and I was like, oh my God, we should play Army of Two. Me and Daniel used to play it all the time. She's like, me and my sister used to play it. So we'll probably do that at some point. That game is fucking perfect.
Yeah, dude. The first one was super good. The second one was good too.
Army of
2-2.
Was that even what it was called? Probably not. It probably had like a Army subtitle.
Army of Two, like, you know, something more.
Generic subtitle.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's everything for me.
Did you watch Loki?
I didn't watch the second episode of Loki
Jesus
yet.
Jesus Christ.
I know. I fucked up.
This is homework.
I haven't watched it yet. Sorry.
Oh, my God. All right. We're going to go watch it and come back up here.
Did you like it better or first than the first episode? Better or worse than the first episode?
Better, probably.
Cool.
There's a lot of concepts that fuck with my head. And so that's cool.
Yeah, that's my bad.
Yeah, it's fine. And then I'll probably watch Dave once I get off.
Yeah, Dave. I think it comes on Hulu like the day after. So it like premiered yesterday and should be on today.
Yeah.
So
it's Thursday right now.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I went to go look at it. I'm like, fuck, should I stay up? But yeah. Anyway,
I'm pumped. So I guess that's everything. We got to figure out what book we're doing next week.
Yeah, I had a couple ideas, Nathan.
Okay, great. Let's hear them.
So this Sunday we got Rick and Morty coming out
already
their fifth season. Yeah.
Oh shit.
June 20th.
Oh my God. Do you want to do a Rick and Morty book?
We could do a Rick and Morty book, or we can knock out two birds with one stone by doing another Eisner Award winner and also a good book for Pride Month and do Barbalian. Or would you rather?
I really like Barbalian.
Yeah. So that would definitely push me to read it as well.
Is it in trade form yet?
I don't know. It ended a while ago. It
ended like just a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Oh, I thought it was a barb. Yeah.
It is?
Mm-hmm. 135 pages, 5 issues.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So we could do that. Does it kind of stand alone pretty well, or do you have to kind of have the Black Hammer knowledge?
I would say it stands alone.
Okay.
So. I mean, you kind of just, yeah. Honestly, there's not a whole lot of other Black Hammer characters in there.
Okay.
But it's still like, if it doesn't win an Eisner, I will be a little angry.
Okay.
That's how much I like this
book. Yeah, we could definitely do that, and maybe Rick and Morty just like another week, because it's coming out week to week.
Yeah, true. All right, cool. Barbalian.
Nice.
From the universe, from the world of Black Hammer.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I'm going to see if I can get a physical.
You should. Honestly, it's totally worth it.
Yeah.
I have all the single issues, but I'll buy the trade.
I could see myself having like every single
like all those spinoffs
of like Black Hammer. Yeah,
yeah, that'd be kind of dope.
The library editions, all that shit.
Oh yeah, yep. All right, so then Barbie Lane, Red Planet next week, and that's the show for this week, everybody. Alrighty. Thanks for listening. Appreciate you. Thanks I love you in. Even.
I love you too.
No, I'm talking to listeners, not you.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you, Nathan Moss, for our music.
Oh, yeah.
You can reach us if you'd like to tell us what Eisner-nominated books are good, in your opinion, by emailing us at tradewaiterspod@gmail.com or tweeting at us at tradewaiterspod on Twitter. I am at more like Nate Thick on Twitter.
Dan Natividad.
And that's everything, I think.
Alrighty.
So, see you later, boys and girls, and everything in between. I'll see you next week.
Yeah, definitely. Bye-bye.